The I Do Not Comply campaign is a movement of freedom fighters from all around the world. Men, women, black, brown, white, religious, non-believers, who share something very important, a desire to reclaim their lives and their freedoms. When it comes to unconstitutional, authoritarian measures, be brave and speak out with four simple words. I do not comply. Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. I'm so honored to be joined by my guest this evening. We have my colleague, Tracy, who has been acting as our legal liaison, and constitutional attorney, Alex Johnson of Bernard and Johnson, LLC, who's been practicing law for over a decade in both state and federal court, and who is representing us in our lawsuit challenging the executive COVID orders of Governor Brian Kemp here in the state of Georgia. Please give him a warm welcome.
Thanks for having me on tonight. I'm glad to be here.
Yes, thank you.
Thank y'all. First off, why don't we talk about, Tracy, you were the one that found Alex after we had called,
You know,
swarms and swarms of pages and pages of attorneys, and people rejected us and turned us down or quoted us ridiculous retainers. And we finally found Alex. So maybe you could speak to that.
Yeah, I feel really blessed. Thank you, Alex, and for your support and your help in this journey with us to regain our freedoms here in Georgia. And, you know, I was basically just a concerned citizen like all of us that are here tonight. And I was like, something is wrong, you know, when they're telling me I can't leave the house even though I'm healthy and just all the crazy things that were happening. So I work for myself. I have my own business. And so I just started reaching out, and I reached out to, you know, Peggy Hall, Pam Popper, Tom Brent in Ohio, just some people that you may, some of you may be aware of. And then I reached out to Kilgore because I joined his group, I Do Not Comply. And I was just like, we've got to do something. And I see our rights are being taken away. And there's no reason for it. And what does this mean? I mean, it was just back almost a year ago, right? So so anyways, I did start speaking with Kilgore, and I asked Kilgore, I said, hey, if I find an attorney, would you in your group be supporting, help me support and get that thing going? And he said, yes. So I found Alex after lots of phone calls. Most people that I called, the receptionist or the admin, couldn't wait to get me off the phone. So, again, it was just one of those things where Kilgore actually gave me the name. And then also a friend in the Coweta County GOP also gave me Alex's name. So I had his name twice and called him, and within, I think, a half a day, we were talking to each other and getting off the ground on the lawsuit. And I'll never forget what you said to me, Alex. You said, I've been waiting for somebody like you to call about the emergency orders because I cannot do a lawsuit myself. So do you remember saying that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, and absolutely. I was like, oh, my gosh, I found the one to help us. And tears came to my eyes, and I was really excited and still am. You've done such a great job for us and very appreciative. So, yeah, many, many things can happen when you really are dedicated like we are, and as all of you are on the call, I'm sure. So thank you. And I'll pass with that.
Well, Alex, why don't you tell us about this, our lawsuit that was, filed earlier this month. Our Governor Kemp was served, I believe, on February 16th. And why don't you give us an update on, you know, just an overview about what this case aims to achieve, what it's about, and what are the next steps that we expect to happen with it?
Yeah, well, thank you for that, and thank you, Tracy, for the kind words about getting it all started. Because what this has terrified me from the beginning, like the way that COVID orders were entered, the way it's influenced people's lives and the way people have, to a large extent, complied with these restrictions on their lives. So when Tracy contacted me, I mean, I started looking into other states and how a lot of times they had been successful or looked like it could be successful in stopping some of the executive orders. And the way that the lawsuit was structured here in Georgia was looking at the executive orders from the perspective of, does the governor have the power to do this, to do all of these things that have completely upended our lives? Mm-hmm. And one of those things, going all the way back to, you know, when you think back to elementary school and they talked about separation of powers, like the legislative branch from the executive branch, that's one of the main things that is in our lawsuit that we filed regarding Governor Kemp's orders. I mean, there's a lot of different detailed constitutional arguments. I mean, constitutional law, civil rights law is very, very detailed and complicated and somewhat, you know, not that many attorneys know a lot about it. But one of the things that we argued is the separation of powers, the idea that the legislative branch can't just create new law and, and like that's something that they can do. Sorry, the legislative branch can only create new law. The executive branch cannot. And essentially, the legislative branch can't just defer all responsibility to the executive. And that, to a large extent, is what happened. I mean, there's a law in Georgia against wearing masks, and yet the executive orders are encouraging people to do it and forcing different industries to have that in their areas. So we filed the lawsuit, as Kilgore mentioned. It was served earlier in February. Surprisingly, or maybe not so surprisingly, the day after, the legislative branch dropped a bill to allow visitation of nursing home residents. That's one of the things that we brought up in our lawsuit, talking about how people were being kept and are being kept from their loved ones. I mean, you know, you live through a long, healthy life, 60, 70, 80 years, and then you're told your family can't see you. In some cases, when people are dying, they're still being told, well, your family still can't see you. And that's something that is a direct result of these executive orders. People who are suffering mental, like just mental damages, they are suffering just from being kept from their loved ones. And that's something we brought up in the lawsuit as well, is not just the idea of the Constitution, not just the idea of financial and business impacts, but the real human impact of what the government is doing to people who are supposed to be free. I mean, we're free people and the government can't do this. That's why we have the Constitution. That's why we have separation of powers. And we have a lot of politicians, especially those in the legislature, who just deferred responsibility. And that's what this lawsuit really points out and brings up, is that they can't just pass the buck and keep everyone in fear, acting like they're important and doing something when what they're doing is ruining people's lives. So over the next month or so, I mean, I think it's the deadline, the entry of service was filed on the 24th. I would expect that an answer to the lawsuit will be filed by the end of March, and we will move forward. I would hope that our elected officials, specifically Governor Kemp, and others, would realize the truth behind our lawsuit and actually stand for the Republican principles that they have always claimed to stand for of individual rights, and get rid of these executive orders, and hopefully consent, similar to how the Secretary of State consented to election law changes in violation of the law. I would hope that Governor Kemp would consent to an entry of a judgment that defines that they are not allowed to ruin people's lives and businesses and keep people from their families. I mean, if the government can consent illegally to election law changes, I would hope they can consent legally to constitutional truths that we brought up in our lawsuit.
Thank you. So I had a question about, can I jump in here, Kilgore? Yeah. So thank you very much, Alex. I was going to ask about, you mentioned that the state has 30 days, is it? Kemp has 30 days to respond to the lawsuit. Could you tell us a little bit more about what you expect or what happens typically when they respond to lawsuits? Or this is unprecedented. We've never done anything like this before, so I'm not sure if you can say, but anyways, just wanted to get a little more details.
Well, I mean, what I have to say right that it involves a little bit of like political realities too. In addition to being, you know, focusing on legal practice, which is all, you know, civil rights law and personal injury practice and representing some businesses, I'm also in a volunteer capacity, I'm very involved in Republican politics. And one thing about this is that I believe personally that a lot of these actions that have been taken are due to the fact that if they aren't taking the actions, you know, a lot of authoritarian leftists are going to use it to try to throw Republicans out of office. I mean, that's the political reality of it. And I would hope that what will happen, because as you mentioned, this is unprecedented. I mean, you've never seen government in the United States try to control people's lives to this extent in reaction to some sort of national emergency, except back, the most recent was probably like the Korematsu decision, like the Korematsu cases, which is when the U.S. government locked up, like internment camp locked up, Japanese citizens during, not Japanese citizens, American citizens with Japanese descent during World War II.
Yeah.
Was, I mean, appalling. I think it's widely accepted. Like everybody I've ever talked to thinks that is appalling. And that's probably the last time there's been anything this drastic done. And history already said that that was wrong. So the idea of controlling people's lives in this way is unprecedented. And I would expect that the response, I mean, what I'm hopeful for, and I think, you know, I do think that Republicans are less authoritarian than Democrats in most situations.
I hope so.
Personally, again, personal opinion. So I would hope that all the Republicans in the legislature and Governor Kemp would see this, read it, and say, yeah, we're wrong for doing this, and we should admit this and get out in front of that and join the crowd of other states that are actually starting to stand up and be leaders and saying that, all right, we're done with this. I mean, people can exercise personal responsibility. That's what Kristi Noem from South Dakota said in a speech I heard months ago. And I think that would be great for Brian Kemp here in Georgia to say as well, to say that look, we want people to be healthy, but these orders, we don't need them anymore and we don't want them. And in that case, in consenting to some sort of judgment or decree that prohibits this type of thing from happening again.
100%. And that's one thing I really hope that our suit accomplishes is that we set a legal precedent that this can never be done ever again, that Americans cannot be told to shelter in place, that they're told that they can't peacefully assemble, that they can't assemble to conduct business, to conduct worship. You know, you mentioned the Japanese internment camps, and those, I think everybody is in agreement that was horrible act and it was unethical and immoral as we look back with the hindsight of history. But, you know, that was even, those were, the claim was these could be potentially enemy combatants, right? They locked every American up. So they have changed this paradigm to make all of us potentially the terrorist or the enemy combatant. And it is something that is just, it's inhuman, it's sinister, and it is un-American. And we're just very grateful to have you in this fight representing us. And that's, you know, that's changed the course of history here. Let's make sure that this government overreach, this tyranny can never be done again here in Georgia and set a precedent for the rest of the country.
Absolutely. And when you mentioned that all the things have gone on in the way that you know, the legal issue with all of it is due process. I mean, I deal with, you know, false arrest claims a lot under the Fourth Amendment, like the idea of people being arrested for no reason or having their rights taken away for no reason. And that's something that happened with the Japanese during World War II. I mean, the American Japanese during World War II. But it's also what is going on here is that people are being ordered to shelter in place or told to shelter in place and being in a way what you would normally consider like in a way punishment for criminals, it's being meted out on everyone, which is
like house arrest, right?
Yeah,
isn't it like kind of like house arrest?
Yeah, it's intrinsically a violation of due process. And I think that what happened is people were so focused on staying safe that a lot of good, well-thinking people didn't realize, like, wait a second, like, yeah, sure. I mean, we would all be a lot safer theoretically from other people without the Fourth Amendment, but we wouldn't be safe from the government because they would just do whatever they want. And that's what I think, in a way, happened in a lot of people's minds, is that they think that, all right, well, you know, the government can do what they want to keep us safe. And that's not the case. That's not what being an American is. And I don't know how many of the viewers tonight have looked at the executive orders and the guidance on them in detail. But one thing that I've noticed constantly, and this is something that's in other areas too. I mean, it's the idea that uncertainty breeds fear. And you see that in economic markets all the time. If it's uncertain, you see volatility and fear and people selling stocks. In reality, like, if you read the executive orders, there's a lot of contradictory language in there. Like, it'll say something about how, you know, like, you have to shelter in place, or you're encouraged to if you're over a certain age. Mm-hmm. But then it says that you're allowed to be out if it's for someone's health or taking care of someone. But then it says that, well, in a nursing home, like, they need to follow these restrictions. You can't be around those people. So what if the people in nursing homes' health is being hurt by being kept away from loved ones? I mean, it's very uncertain and ambiguous as to what you can do, what you can't do, what you should be doing. And it that uncertainty from anyone reading it would naturally breed fear. And I think that is something that this lawsuit will do a great job undercutting, because it lays it out in a legal framework that points out that we shouldn't be afraid. We should be standing up for our rights and standing by that. And you know, hopefully the judges, if the governor doesn't agree with it, I think that judges will do the right thing. They'll realize that they need to uphold the law, not give in to the passions of fear of the majority.
Well, I hope you're right. And I'm very optimistic about our lawsuit and also the things that we've already seen. Like, you referenced, I believe it's House Bill 290, right? Which is the proposed bill that would allow nursing, or would require nursing homes to allow visitors. And then there is also a House Bill 358 that just got proposed, which will limit the Georgia governor's emergency powers, because, you know, a state of emergency isn't intended to go on. It's for 30 days, and it has now been renewed every 30 days for almost a year. I mean, we are coming up on the 1 year anniversary of 15 days to slow the spread. I mean, this is insane. And, you know, this, we've never seen this kind of government overreach before in our country, and we need to put an end to it.
Oh, yeah. And one thing that I noticed while researching some of this, and this isn't directly part of the lawsuit, but you mentioned executive orders. One thing that I was surprised by, and I didn't even realize, is that do you guys know that the executive orders entered last year regarding the state of emergency based on the violence over the summer that mobilized the National Guard? That was renewed within the past 30 days. Like the one from the unrest in downtown that mobilized National Guard troops, not for COVID, but for the, you know,
for the George Floyd protests.
Yeah, that executive order has been renewed as well, all the way up till present time, to stop unlawful assembly and violence is what the order reads. It says that that's the reasoning for it. But those have been renewed constantly too, which is which was actually a surprise to me, because I mean, I don't think any of us have been seeing regular unrest and violence tied to that event. But the government doesn't voluntarily give up power until the separation of powers or the people, you know, force them to.
And I think that's what we're seeing. You know, it's like the old dynamic of just, I liken it to a schoolyard bully. You know, the bully will confront you on Monday and, you know, demand that you give them your lunch money, and you give them your lunch money. And then Tuesday he comes back and he pushes you around. He wants your backpack. Wednesday, he wants your jacket. By the end of the week, you know, you're down to your underwear, you've lost everything. But the minute you stand up to him and you kick him where the sun don't shine, they back off and they start to respect you. And that we're in that classic bully bullied dynamic. Yeah.
It's a tyranny. It's, yeah. And I absolutely agree, Kilgore. And I was thinking also about, you had mentioned there's been four articles, news stories, articles, one on TV, three articles, and then those two bills that you just showed, Kilgore, that have happened all since the lawsuit. And Alex, just to reemphasize that, do you think that's a direct result of what of filing this, I don't know, 3 weeks ago, I guess it is. And actually it got, that's when it was served, but it was filed on the 2nd. So it's been just over a month.
Yeah. And honestly, I think that that's something where, I mean, we will never, no matter what anyone says, we can never know the absolute truth on that. But for my personal just sort of belief, based on my knowledge of the way politicians work, most politicians won't do anything, especially not against people who are powerful within their party, unless it's to help themselves. That tends to be what goes on. I mean, there are a few state representatives I've known who have stood up against power for the right reasons. But, you know, dropping bills, limiting the governor's power, I mean, that's something that usually politicians do it to save their own skin. They see the writing on the wall. They'll see a lawsuit like the one that we filed, that you all have done a good job getting the support and help for, and they'll see that and they'll think, oh, this is a political weakness. We better do something. I mean, the whole idea of letting loved ones see their families in nursing homes, I mean, that's something that obviously, if that ends up being all over newspapers and TV about how they weren't doing that and people who were harmed by that order start paying attention, I mean, that's something that can hurt someone's reelection chances. And I think that for those reasons, they're trying to you know, stop any sort of negative publicity. But I mean, I would much rather them just, you know, they can avoid the legislative hurdles by just accepting the lawsuit and agreeing to a judgment or decree that says that they can't do it anymore. I mean, that it's unconstitutional, which is the truth, in addition to it being morally right.
And to end all the current restrictions, right? That's mm-hmm. what we're asking for. So Governor Kemp, if you are watching this live stream, maybe you're watching it under an alias or some troll account, end the executive orders against the people of Georgia right now and set a precedent for this to never be allowed to happen again. And we will call off our dogs.
Yeah. Georgia law, I mean, the thing is, in preparation for the suit, I did read through other provisions of Georgia law, and it seems to me personally that the government already has the ability to, you know, fight diseases, to fight pandemics. The way they're supposed to do it is that if someone's sick, they could quarantine them. And if that person wants to challenge that quarantine, they can bring a lawsuit to challenge it in court. The government can quarantine individual people who are a danger. They can't just say to everybody that they have to be locked down because you might be a carrier of a disease. I mean, right. I've been a carrier of a disease 3 years ago. Like, we all are potential carriers of diseases. I mean, that's not a justification for, you know, restricting people's lives and ruining their livelihoods, businesses, and families.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the most troubling things about this is we have lost the presumption of innocence, because now everybody is assumed to be this contagious, deadly, you know, vector of disease, right? And that's the whole thing of, like, everybody has to wear the mask. Everybody has to shelter in place. I mean, this is just unfounded, and it is irrational. And it's hysterical, and it really is, you know, it's a psychological psychosis at this point.
Yeah, and they had laws in place to allow individuals who are dangers to be quarantined. Like, that was in place. They already had a law that the legislature agreed on to go after certain people if those certain individuals were a danger, and they had an ability to challenge that through due process. The way that you know, the worst response I could think of for the government to do at this point is to try to respond saying that people don't have a right to due process to challenge these restrictions, because that would just contradict exactly what the law that the legislature passed said to begin with regarding individuals, like that they do have the ability to challenge an individual quarantine order from the government.
Yeah, this is quarantine times millions mm-hmm. of people. So what do you see? I know there's the legislation that's just coming out to limit the governors, and I haven't even seen that, so I don't know. Is it like 30 days, 45 days? I mean, emergency can't last a year, first of all. What would you like to see happen with the limitation of the governor's powers for emergency orders? Do you have any ideas on that you'd like to share?
I mean, personally, the way I see it is that, I mean, emergency powers, emergency orders, if you read the statute, most of it deals with like ideas of, if I remember correctly, like energy crises or insurrections or things that require like a lot of physical violence and danger and destruction, which, you know, it sort of makes sense that you might want to be able to have an emergency situation that allows, you know, National Guard troops to stop like criminals or like a war going on. But regarding this with the public health situation, I mean, them claiming all these powers based on them and extending it indefinitely without legislative oversight, I mean, that's one major issue personally that I see, is that you need to have legislative oversight regularly, mm-hmm. and you can't have politicians in the legislature just like passing the buck and acting like they have nothing to do with the emergency orders continuing, because that's what they do by allowing indefinite renewals by the governor. They just avoid responsibility and getting voted out of office for continuing it too long. And the other thing I'd really think is important is not allowing this type of thing for anything other than direct threats to people's like physical health or property due to, you know, insurrection or rioting and such. I mean, the idea of doing it because people are sick. I mean, we've had flu pandemics before that did not result in this. I mean, the idea that they can be done just out of, oh, we're afraid of a disease. I mean, it's way too easy these days, especially with social media, with the ability of foreign nations like Russia and China, in order, like their ability to influence public discussion through internet activities and online activities, to breed a panic that could justify, you know, like any sort of fear, like sort of has happened with COVID, justifying fear in order to enact an emergency order. I mean, I think that we, if it's not direct physical harm and violence, I don't think we
should
need
be done at all. Shouldn't be done at all is what you're saying. Not even for 30 days. It should just not be done.
Yeah.
So that's what we'd like the judge to say. So it's just,
yeah. And the best we can hope for, though, I mean, again, that was a lot of my personal preference. What we can hope the judge will do in this is strike down the ones that have been enacted and say that the governor can't just create new law and conflict with state law when doing it during an emergency order. I mean, that would be a state of emergency. That would be what I think a judge would do. I don't think a judge would say that no emergency powers are allowed. That would be something that I think that the legislature could do. But mm-hmm. I think that the politicians are going to pay more attention when we're paying attention to them.
Oh yeah. Yes. I know lots of us have been calling and emailing and going, I've gone down there a bunch of times, and I don't think they're used to being watched like they're being watched right now. So it's good. It's like we need them afraid of us instead of the other way around. Right. So I wanted to talk about the HIPAA part of your emergency the lawsuit about fighting back about the sharing. Could you explain that to me? I'm kind of stumbling around here. Or explain that to our viewers. Yes.
So the complaint we filed is about 23 pages, and paragraph 71. We brought up the sharing of vaccine information with the U.S. government. The way that the law reads in Georgia, from my understanding, the statutory law does not allow private health information to be shared from mm-hmm. the Georgia Department of Public Health, or that's gathered through Georgia health agencies and the federal government. But one of the executive orders, and the most recent one may have it, I know that they did at the time when we filed the suit, explicitly allowed and ordered the Georgia Department of Public Health to be able to share that information with the federal government. Now, this, of course, goes into
That's, yeah. I mean, when I saw that, I went, oh my gosh.
And a lot of people are going to sit there and say, okay, so why is that a big deal? It helps fighting disease. But the issue is that these aren't issues that are just because of COVID and executive orders. These are foundational points of U.S. government. Like, the idea is that states are not, like, they are not subservient to the federal government. States are independent entities that have their own law. And when the state of Georgia's statutory law doesn't allow the sharing of this information, that doesn't mean that when there's an emergency, the governor can create new law saying, all right, you can share it now with the federal government. I mean, imagine the uproar if I hope this isn't going on right now, and if it is, it's appalling. But imagine, like, the whole idea, like, a lot of people are opposed to gun registries. Imagine if every county in Georgia was sharing permit information with the federal government in order to create some national database of gun owners. That would be terrifying to a lot of people for somewhat good reason. I mean, that's the type of thing that's allowed if you just allow, you know, state of emergencies to allow the governor to create new like regulations that share health information, private health information mm-hmm. that you would think is protected by HIPAA and that you want to keep private with the federal government. Because what if the federal government loses it? I mean, everyone should not want all of their health data out there to get to their employers, to potentially get them fired. I mean, it's just sort of creepy. Yeah. And
creepy is right.
Yeah, but
technical,
I mean,
term, creepy.
Yeah, it's creepy. Legal term is that the governor is not the legislative branch and cannot just choose to let all of Georgians' vaccination information go to the federal government for what, like, some arbitrary whim of his or a desire in order to receive some sort of federal funding. I mean, I don't know the reason why. All the orders are say what they do, but I mean, a lot of times the way the federal government tries to get states to do things is by saying, we'll give you money if you do this thing that controls citizens' lives.
I think that's happened a lot with COVID, frankly, because they're getting a boondoggle of cash. All the states are. So, with these emergency orders, that's my understanding. Does that sound accurate to you?
I mean, that's nothing I've researched legally, but from a political standpoint and from my historical knowledge, I mean, generally speaking, when government agencies do these various initiatives, it doesn't matter what, you know, whatever the new fad is that the government's pushing, you can usually be guaranteed there's something in some 1,000-page federal bill authorizing money for some department or some grant to do it. And what's so sad is that in Georgia, we're supposed to have, or at least we're told we have, Republican representation in the state capitol. And I mean, the last I checked, we're for less government spending and more rights on a state level and
other way around.
Yeah, not expanding government and creating new departments and regulations. I mean, people should be considering running in primaries against representatives that are not actually stopping this, not just talking about stopping it, but actually stopping it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you. Did you have a question, Gene, or would you like to?
No, I'm just 100% in agreement. And you know, I do think all roads lead to coercion and bribery with this entire
and money.
I think of it as one giant scam, you know, and beyond just, you know, the federal government giving funding to the states to kind of fall lockstep in line with what they want them to do. We've also seen reports of, you know, countries like Belarus, where the president said, we were offered, you know, billions of dollars from central banks to lock down our citizens, and we refuse to take the money. We're not going to damage our citizens' lives. So I think a lot of this is being coordinated by these centralized places of power and wealth. And that's why we've seen, you know, this is the first time in history we've seen almost every state, every country fall lockstep in line, following one kind of mitigation or, you know, this lockdown, shelter in place, the mask, all this insanity. We've never seen this in the history of mankind. We've, during the last major pandemic, Woodstock took place. 1.5 million people died, and we had one of the biggest, most
parties.
One of the most culturally significant mass gatherings of all time took place. There were no temperature scans and social distancing. So, it's nonsense. And I really hope that, you know, our battle here in Georgia is just going to be another footnote in the history book of the people that stood up and resisted this tyranny and stopped it from ever happening again. So, and thank you so much, Alex, for your efforts in this fight, and for you, Tracy, for all your work buying Alex and coordinating all this. And thank you to all of our brave plaintiffs that have joined our suit.
Yes. You know,
some of these people have just heartbreaking stories where they have lost businesses that they have spent their entire life building, that they've poured their whole soul into, and they've seen it be, you know, these businesses shutter and go out and go bankrupt because of this tyranny. We've seen people that lost their loved ones in assisted living care centers because they couldn't visit them. People that died of neglect and dehydration and things that could have been stopped and intervened had they been able to just visit their loved ones.
I think
I think people don't realize, you know, being cut off from visiting, family members being cut off from visiting their loved ones in hospitals and assisted living care centers has really put this giant strain on the hospital staff or the, you know, the assisted living staff, because that was always kind of shared. It was a shared burden between the family members and the staff. And now it's only the staff that's doing that.
That's a lot of stress on them. Yeah.
They've lost that support network due to these laws, due to these executive orders. So hopefully Kemp will do the right thing and we can get, injunctive relief. What is the phrase?
Yeah, injunctive and declaratory relief. Like, declaratory is the idea that the judge would declare the actions unconstitutional and say that you can't do them. Injunctive relief is like an order saying you can't or don't do this. Like, it stops an action. It enjoins them from doing anything.
Great.
And those would be ideal outcomes.
Yeah. Well, I had another question just on, if you still have some time, do you? I know you've been very generous with your time, Alex. Just so, a few of the states this week, as you've heard, like Texas and Mississippi, there may be some others, have said, okay, it's over. We're opening up 100%. You know, they had mask mandates, they're gone. And they just, canceled out the emergency orders, for lack of a better term. So what happens if Kemp does that in the middle of our lawsuit? What is the end game if that does happen?
Well, there's a few things that can happen. I mean, I would not like the outcome, but it is possible that a judge could declare the situation a term called moot, saying that, well, since there's no issue going on right now, the lawsuit's moot. I think that is unlikely to happen due to the fact that we have, we have brought up some people who have been personally damaged from it. And there's the obvious risk of it being reinstituted again.
Yeah.
And that risk is something that I believe that the judicial branch is well suited to step in and say, look, yes, we think that was bad. I mean, same thing that people tried to make happen after the internment of the Japanese. I mean, just because it wasn't happening anymore doesn't mean that
it couldn't happen again.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what I think would happen, is that they would still make some sort of ruling if the governor doesn't just consent to it. I mean, again, I mean, it's pretty much, I don't know if it's famous or infamous now, but that's exactly what happened with the election law changes, with the Secretary of State's office agreeing with some plaintiffs that wanted a bunch of essentially election law changes. And they just agreed to it and then instituted it. And that happened here in Georgia. So, I mean, I would, if they have the authority to do that, which, you know, like, I mean, I know they have the authority to agree to something that definitely doesn't change the law. And that's what we're doing. We're saying that, you know, the Constitution is right and these regulations from the governor's office were wrong. And the governor can certainly agree with us that they were wrong, or at the very least misguided, and aren't going to do it again. And that would be a nice end to this.
Yes. And, you know, we don't know who we're going to have in the future as a governor, and we don't ever want to go through this again, you know, so that we've got to put a bow on it. You know, we got to wrap it up and finish it, regardless of what takes place. That's how I think.
And Tracy, you saying that, I hadn't even thought of it like that. I mean, I think about, you know, I'm thinking about the legal side of it. I'm thinking, well, this is just bad if it violates like the separation of powers and such. But when you mentioned that, I mean, that's a really good point for anyone looking to put political pressure on these guys, is that imagine if Stacey Abrams was governor with those type of powers. I don't see how people couldn't imagine a situation where the National Guard, which right now is still mobilized, like with the executive order powers, like for to deploy National Guard troops enforcing a mask mandate statewide. I mean, I don't think that's beyond the realm of possibility with people who completely disregard individual rights. I mean, Republicans, yeah. You know, as I said, I think the ones who went along with it, a lot of them may be doing it in order to, you know, like in order for political purposes. But the left, the city I currently live in, I mean, months ago, they passed a mask mandate. And, you know, you get out of it within your business by posting signs. But I mean, the left would be perfectly fine with having like law enforcement enforcing a mask mandate at the, you know, at the point of guns. I mean, that is, I mean,
how crazy they've gotten.
Yeah. I mean,
Stacey Abrams would make Dana Widmer look like an angel, and Gruesome Newsom or whatever. I mean, Stacey Abrams would make them look like angels. So yeah, we don't want that. We got to make sure we protect regardless of who's coming down the line here. So
yeah, that would be a great reason for you know, them to voluntarily limit their own power, is because that is a real possibility. And I don't think any of them want themselves or their friends or family being under a dictatorial Democrat.
Police state. Police state, similar too. Mm-hmm. So I was like, what's the difference between what we're doing in a police state when we first got, you know, the shutdown and everything happened? I was like, what's the difference between us and, you know, anyway.
I mean, in the terminology, terminology is like prison terminology and active shooter terminology, right? Shelter in place, lockdowns. I mean, that a prison gets put down, it puts under lockdown. Shelter in place is what you do when there's an active shooter. You know, the terminology they used was to incite as much fear and hysteria as possible. And of course, the media ran with that and made it even worse. But I guess we're kind of entering the Q&A. If you have a few more minutes, Alex, we asked, you know, our base and our mailing list to send us some questions. So I'd love to ask you a couple of those if you still have a minute.
Yeah.
So this is something you actually referenced earlier in our discussion. And this comes from David. David asks, if Georgia's statute 16-11-38 is not being enforced, what other laws are being thrown out? And for those that don't know that statute, it says that a person is guilty of a misdemeanor when he wears a mask, hood, or device by which any portion of his face is hidden, concealed, or covered to conceal the identity when entering a public or private property, right? So like you had referenced, it was against the law in Georgia to go into a store with a mask on. But now it's like a lot of places are insisting that you wear a mask because the governor just suspended this law. So what other statutes or laws has the governor just thrown out that you know of?
And the one thing that I do not practice is I don't really practice much criminal law at all. That's something my law partner, Catherine Bernard, is very, very good at, but that is not something that I'm very knowledgeable about. But as far as I know, the main thing the governor has thrown out is the Constitution, both of the state of Georgia and the federal Constitution, because people talk about the Constitution and caring about rights a lot, but I mean, there aren't that many people who have really looked at, like, so what does that mean? And that includes due process and the idea that you can't be punished or lose things without like notice in a hearing or other types of process that are due under the law. The idea of like the, you know, freedom to like the idea of not having property taken by the government without just compensation. And that's another section often referring to real property like land. But at the same time, I mean, you definitely can't just seize people's businesses. I mean, that seems a little perverse. The Fourth Amendment, the idea of, you know, harassing people and invading their privacy rights. I mean, that's something that the U.S. Supreme Court has recognized, yet, you know, they're definitely doing that if they're sharing health information. And then you look at separation of powers, the base bedrock of our state constitution and our federal one, and that just being ignored because, you know, because there's political pressure to keep, you know, to quote unquote keep people safe. I mean, I think that's why there's been so much compliance, is because it's not like, you know, all of a sudden we're driving on the other side of the road, or, you know, it's now legal to kill people, like some sort of odd, like, you know, the show The Purge. Like, it's nothing like that. It's just something where they threw out the bedrock of what we all sort of are used to, but most people don't think about it because it's the bedrock of what we're used to. We're used to the legislature passing the laws and the executive executing them. We aren't used to some sort of weird, like, oh yeah, this is an emergency, so everybody do what we say. I mean, it is so big that I think a lot of people couldn't even comprehend how it was undermining the bedrocks of our constitution. There are tons of lawyers mm-hmm. who don't understand it. A ton of civil rights lawyers, a lot of whom are leftists, but I don't think they even recognize the immensity of it. And just something Tracy mentioned earlier about how the lockdowns were hurting people in other countries. I mean, you look at, like, this is something I tell people that disagree with me politically all the time. If you Google UN hunger hunger or starvation, May 2019, COVID, you will get UN reports, like, this is the United Nations reports on how hundreds of millions of people were in danger of starvation due to, you know, they say effects of the pandemic, but it really means is the lockdowns, like
the shutdowns. Yeah.
Yeah. People who were economically affected because people's businesses shut down here, so they aren't buying goods from overseas. So people overseas who aren't getting, you know, $1,400 stimulus checks no longer have a job. So how are they eating? How are they getting food? I mean, this is something that a lot of people in the United States who 2 years ago were preaching about, you know, helping people that are impoverished in other countries are now like, I mean, they don't care anymore. They're like, oh, I'm afraid for my own life. Who cares if they starve? And that mm-hmm. is, to me, that's disgusting and appalling. Yeah. The idea that people can, you know, just be easily dismissed because, you know, they want a sense of security through these attacks on the bedrock of our United States and Georgia constitutions.
Would you remember what Benjamin Franklin said, if you trade freedom for security, you're going to end up with neither. You know, you end up with neither. And mm-hmm. so a false sense of security is just that, it's false. And I hope people are waking up, and I know everyone on the show has woken up to that, as well as lots of other people. So it's like, hey, you know, I mean, life isn't risk-free. Life isn't risk-free, and, you know, we are all connected in the world, and it is. I've sent, you know, donations across seas where my husband and I travel scuba diving, and Philippines is one of the countries, and Indonesia, and they depend on, you know, tourism 90% to 100% of their, you know, of their livelihood. So I don't know what they're all doing, but it is very frightening to think about that. So anyways.
Oh yeah, no, it is absolutely terrifying, and people running. That I like your friend there.
She wants my attention.
I saw her earlier too. Yeah. I'm really gonna comment that what you mentioned about how bad it is that it really is something that most people, like, they want to feel safe. And I mean, I think part of the reason why, as you mentioned earlier, I was so happy to hear from you, is that, like, doing what I do, I mean, I've done a lot of civil rights litigation over the years, and I've seen cases and handled cases where people were pressure washed while in jail by their guards, like by jailers, like people getting pulled over and arrested for really no reason. I had one guy who got arrested once for, you know, for no reason. But then when a police officer is questioned, he admitted that he arrested the guy due to something he said, like due to the First Amendment. Like someone said protected speech and the officer arrested him because the person allegedly said something that was insulting to the officer. And it's like, this is like, that's the government. Like I've seen that for years, is that like oftentimes government is either incompetent or it's arbitrary. And it's not something that we should be putting like all of our faith in for our security. I mean, the government has done good things, but ultimately like you don't trust it with your safety and life and livelihood. And, you know, for a decade, I've been seeing people getting their rights violated by people that, you know, you and I, and probably everyone listening right now to the live stream would trust. We would normally trust people in government, but it's like, no, not if you see like the way that they act in a lot of cases. I mean, we need to be more focused on personal responsibility, which is something that, you know, as I mentioned earlier in the political side of it, that's what Republicans believe in. We believe in personal responsibility for our health and well-being and safety, not just getting scared and turning it over to the government. And that's why when you called, I was very much like, yes, people who want to fight this, people who are willing to be plaintiffs and fine plaintiffs to point out to the world just how this is directly contradicting our Constitution. I mean, it is directly contradicting the bedrock of our society. And, you know, if this was 30 years ago, the comparison to the Soviet Union and or today, I guess it'd be Russia, would be very key, which is the fact that they have a very strong constitution that protects people's rights. Apparently, if you can read the Russian, from what I've heard, I cannot read Russian, but that is what I've been told. But I mean, their opposition politicians get locked up. You know, if you read it, it's all about rights, but in application, that isn't what you're getting. And that is something that I know that none of us want to see in our country, is where the constitution doesn't mean what it says.
Yes. Agreed, totally.
Tracy, did you have any other questions for Alex?
Take a look here.
I have a ton of questions were about masks and about private businesses, about post offices. And I know like this is like unprecedented, uncharted territory. And a lot of what you're talking about is the Constitution. And the Constitution, my understanding, is there to restrict the reach of the government. And there's not a lot in there that's restricting private business, but you know, I hope that there will be future lawsuits that do challenge private businesses, because I see a lot of things that are a lot of tyrannical measures that are being pushed through the private sector. The one that's most alarming to me is these vaccine passports that they're saying that you're going to need to travel, that airlines are going to require, that even some shops or offices are going to require you to have this, you know, talking about privacy and data and medical records, that you're going to have some QR code that you scan that shows that either you've had a negative PCR test for COVID or that you've been vaccinated to go to school, to go to work. So there's a lot of scary things being pushed to the private sector. But do you want to just kind of, you want to say anything to that, just about, you know, what, how do we limit the private sector's reach here and the mask issue? And can the post office turn you away? Can private businesses? But also remember, don't depress people.
Just joking. No, that's the thing. Lawyers can sometimes be the worst case scenario type of people. And, you know, it's hard not to, you know, when you walk outside and you see like a bunch of people like just wearing masks, to not think like, wow, this is
where are we?
And it's a two-pronged issue. I mean, it's on the legal front, the governor's order EO here in Georgia doesn't explicitly, like the at least part of it, one provision in it says doesn't require masks, but it does allow local ordinances requiring them, and it does strongly encourage their use. And you know, there could be a legal fight over that, and you can legally fight whether or not a local city can require masks or not, and whether or not that's a violation of like other laws, because that's what it ends up coming down to, is that does a local ordinance violate some other law, because that's, you know, or the Constitution. And usually localities have a lot of discretion, and the Constitution doesn't really I mean, unless it's a, you know, freedom of speech, freedom of religion argument, a First Amendment argument, I think that, you know, that would be where you might be able to challenge it constitutionally. But local businesses, though, I mean, you may be able to challenge it based on some sort of disability act or some other law. But I personally don't really, I mean, I don't really like the idea of using like a like government laws that are restricting people to try to fight another government restriction. Like, and to me, it's a very, it's fraught with relying a lot on the government to sort of regulate you the right way. I think that ultimately what we need to look at with local businesses is that that should theoretically be hurting their business. Now, if a government is making all businesses require masks, then you don't really have much choice except to go to another city or like move geographically. But if there isn't a government mandate requiring masks locally, I think that what's important to realize is take your business elsewhere. You know what I mean? Like, that's the key there is, you know, find other entities that aren't going to be as draconian. Because, you know, that's what it is, personal responsibility. And I know plenty of people who are tired of this. I know people on all sides of the political spectrum who are tired of it at this point. They realize that this is not
nonsense
made out to be.
Yeah. So don't you think, to kind of piggyback on that question that Kilgore, if I can jump in here, don't you think that having the governor's emergency orders rescinded, canceled, whatever you say, will also like help with some of that anyways? Don't you think that that's going to be, it's not directly in here, but that it will be a result, you know, if there's no emergency orders, how can they make you wear a mask or something like that?
I mean, absolutely. And that's something that we're learning more and more about. I mean, it really is. It's something where, because of the spread of knowledge and information in social media, that I mean, psychology comes into this a lot, like the effects of various actions on people's psyches, the way that they perceive the world. It's something that, you know, people have known about for years, but now with mass communication, it's become more obvious. I mean, having something like the executive orders in place creates this sense of, well, look, we're in a state of emergency. We should all be afraid. You get rid of that, and people start being less afraid. For good or for ill, that's what happens. And I think that by getting rid of these, it really makes it so that we go to how it should have been to begin with. Sort of the idea that was pushed in South Dakota, the idea that was pushed originally in Sweden, which is the idea that, look, we're a free people. We all have a responsibility and obligation to be smart and take responsibility for our own health and our own decisions. Mm-hmm. And to act accordingly. I mean, I think Kristi Noem in South Dakota, I think, made that explicit in some speeches. And I know that was a general idea in Sweden, like about a year ago, a little bit under a year ago. That is what they were pushing, is the idea like, look, you're smart people. You figure it out and make up your mind. We will put out scientific information. We'll put out data. But you make your decisions. And that, to me, is empowering to the people. And that's probably why the politicians aren't pushing it, is because, you know, it's easier to get votes is acting like a savior and trying to save people after making them afraid, rather than empowering people and letting them know, look, you are a person that is free and smart and capable of learning things. And, you know, you make your best decision for yourself. If you want to stay home, fine. If you don't want to stay home, fine. But, you know, don't go out when you're sick and make other people sick, because we can quarantine you if you personally do that. But if you aren't doing that, you know, you are
live your life
free. Yeah, you get
to live your life.
Yeah, you aren't hurting people. You're good.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's, Tracy, unless you have anything else to add, I think that's probably a great place to wrap up. Thank you both for your time. And Alex, once again, thank you so much for your work, your hard work on this case. And I'm very optimistic about what the future holds. I will just, I want to say that people can help this legal battle by going to idonotcomply.org. And on our website, you will find a link to the Georgia Freedom Fund. And through there, you can donate to our legal fund that is funding this lawsuit. And thanks to our generous donors, you know, we've been able to put you on retainer and then replenish our retainer after, months of research and work that you've put into this. So please go there and donate. And I also want to say that I Did Not Comply is going to be having a rally at the CDC on March 13th, which is a week from this Saturday, which is marking the 1 year anniversary of when this state of emergency was declared. And it's the 1 year anniversary of the 15 days to slow the spread. And we're gathering to say enough is enough. We're done with this. And like you said, Alex, we are free people and we are done being afraid. We are done living in fear and we are done living under the boot heel of the government. And we are going to be free moving forward. So thank you both so much.
Yeah, I just want to thank the plaintiffs again also. Thank all the brave plaintiffs. Kilgore, I know you mentioned it earlier, but it took a lot of people to get where we are today and the plaintiffs. And it's their situations, which are very sad and very, all of us have. But I'm just glad that we're all here together working towards a better solution. So thank you.
Yeah, and thank all of you. Like, thank both of you for having me on, and thank you everybody listening, and especially everyone supporting I Do Not Comply. And this is we need good people to stand up to really make change in the world. I mean, I've been involved in politics and law for years, and change only comes through through well-intentioned people being willing to sacrifice their time and energy to really make a difference. And that's what I think we're all in this together trying to make that happen. And I appreciate all of you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. And thank you, Alex. Fabulous. So appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you all very much. And everybody out there, stay strong and keep fighting. We're going to win this fight for truth and freedom. Stay fearless.
Yes.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.